This is Willem Firth from the Cornell Big Red. You're listening to the D-Fly Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, Inside Lacrosse analysts, and my Homewood homeboy, Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, we have a wonderful show this week. On tap are two top 10 matchups, including one featuring Cornell and Harvard. We'll sit down with Cornell leading scorer Willem Firth for our weekly conversation as the Big Red prepare for the Crimson. And of course, we will review and preview the biggest games in college lacrosse taking place on a weekend filled critical games that will determine regular season conference champs, conference tournament seeding, and the NCAA tournament picture. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, the postseason is upon us. When people start listening to this, it's like they're going to be like playoff games happening on Friday night. This will come out on Friday morning. There'll be playoff games already. Some of the women's tournaments have already begun. But let's rewind first and let's just talk about what a wonderful weekend it was for the lacrosse group. Some amazing games, one goal games up and down in some of the biggest top 20 matchups. Beautiful weather, great crowds. What a weekend for the sport.
It was awesome. I had a great week last week. I kicked it off with a trip down to Tobacco Road. I did the Carolina Duke women's game on the ACC network with Sheehan Stanwyck Birch on Thursday night. Duke was up 5-3. And the three goals were scored by Chloe Humphrey of North Carolina. The Heels ended up winning 11-5. And Humphrey, I think, finished with 7 or 8 goals and 3 assists. She's ridiculous. And I saw her in person last year in the quarterfinals, but she's gotten even better. And Carolina, obviously, is an incredibly talented team. They're rising after losing to Northwestern. Northwestern's on the rise. So should be a great women's tournament. Friday was up on the banks of the Raritan for Penn State and Rutgers, our regular season finale on the Big Ten Network. And it's crazy. 2 weeks in a row, Rutgers played a really good first quarter and then got outscored in the second quarter 6-0. They did it against Maryland. They did it against Penn State. It was disappointing for the crowd because a big crowd had showed up. It was a blackout, meaning they were wearing black jerseys. But in any event, Then I had to make sure I had enough left in the tank for Saturday with Kark at Homewood Field. And I mean, I got there like around 11:45. The back parking lot was already 3/4 full. Smell the food, feel the vibe. Little pockets of nerds were tailgating, and that's the beauty of Hopkins Lacrosse. People you thought would like never even know what a lacrosse stick is, and they are huge fans. And the Hopkins Maryland game brings them all out. Then you walk up to the field. It was from start to finish, man. It's what the sport is all about. Sold out crowd, people standing a couple deep around the field. You were there. What was it like in the crowd?
Homewood Field, as good as it gets.
Yeah,
buzz in the crowd. You forget how nerdy some of the Hopkins people just are. Just people making comments, and you're like, this guy's making hockey comments, and you're like, that's a different sport, buddy. I'll tell you one thing. Before the game, I went down to Charles Village Pub to meet some people around noon for lunch.
The CVP in Charles Village,
on St. Paul Street.
Yeah.
It was infiltrated. I think that was the site of the Maryland Terps parents' tailgate. It was packed with people wearing red and Terps gear. And one guy, I was next to him and he was like getting his check. And definitely parents. I talked to them. They're definitely, their kid plays on the team for Maryland. So I was like, that's okay. What they're here.
But did you identify yourself as D-Fly from the podcast?
I didn't. You know, even though I was on a home turf, I felt like I was in College Park. That's how
you would have gotten beaten up.
Absolutely. I wasn't going to get beat up. It was absolutely packed, though. Just packed. It was just, that's what you want, like in a, like a college environment. Like that's if you went to a Big Ten football game, an SEC football game, and you go into like the, one of the local places around
Yeah.
there. That's what it'd be in the pregame and after the game, and that's what it felt like. And it was just, it's fun. It's really fun.
You know, I didn't verbalize it, and maybe I should have on the game, but I did take a moment. It might have been in the third quarter when we were on a break or something, and I was like, man, Jerry Smith would really freaking love this environment. The old, you know, the former owner of PJ's who's no longer with us. And you know, you can't help but think like what PJ's would have been like after
Oh my
after that
goodness.
game.
Well, that was that lo old location. It's now called Home Slice, and that was going to be our
Right. And they do
rendezvous.
a great job, but
That
I
was
don't
supposed to
know.
be our lunch rendezvous spot with a bunch of guys who were coming back for like campus for the reunion, and it was closed.
What?
Takeout only.
Oh
I
my
was like,
God.
these guys lost
On homecoming weekend?
at least a month's worth of revenue today.
Wow.
At least. What are they doing? I don't know. So that's why we ended up at CVP's.
Oh my God.
Yeah, crazy.
I am floored.
Yeah.
That is maybe the worst business decision I have heard in a very long time. Holy mackerel. I
Yeah, big
can't
time.
believe that.
Hey, let's bring in our guest this week. Our old friend Craig McMichael is joining us again. Craig, how you doing?
Fantastic. I want to thank Dixie for the call. I was on the road all day Saturday, but he was tickling my ears with that wonderful rivalry game, so I appreciate it.
It's been a while since he tickled anybody's ear, so
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Craig is every week he is the creator of the Weekend Watch on InsideLacrosse.com. He is a coach, administrator. He's a lacrosse junkie, and it's always nice to have him on the show. So let's get into it. Craig, what it takes besides Dixie's call and him being on every call last weekend, apparently. Other thoughts on last weekend before we head to another incredible weekend of college lacrosse?
Definitely, I say playoffs are in the air. You had a one-goal game with UNC and UVA. That game was electric. The atmosphere in Harvard, hats off to the athletic department, hats off to Jerry Byrne. They've created a vibe up in Cambridge and made it one, I think, the toughest places to play. And I'm ready for it. You know, I feel like our February banter of when we should play or all the snow stuff is now behind us. And I'm just ready for like elimination, win or go home season.
Well, it is upon us. We have a couple of conference tournaments games to preview, but also two games we'll start with that are key for conference regular season championships Friday, as well as seeding for the conference tournament. But before we do that, a reminder that the DFly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Thank you to the Simplicity Group team for all that you do. All right, Dixie and Craig, Friday night, we're going to kick it off with a huge game in the Atlantic 10. Number 4 ranked Richmond, 11-1, 5-0 in the A10, having a great season. Going to play the surprise of the A10. High Point is also 5-0. They're 6-6 overall, but 5-0 in the A10. This is for the regular season title, as well as the top seed in the A10 tournament. This game's at 5 o'clock. Fans can catch it on ESPN Plus. Just a little game note: Richmond has won 8 straight in the series and 10 of the last 11 meetings. They are heavy favorites. They're 6.5 goal favorites in this. But this is why you play, and that's why a home field advantage at High Point on Friday evening could make a difference.
High Point is an athletic department committed to winning March Madness this year. Their men's basketball team sprung an upset in the first round and was competitive in the second round. Lacrosse is no different. This is a team that started 1-5, and they've taken care of business in conference. Rattle off 5 consecutive victories. They lost to Cornell last weekend, or on the 13th, I should say, of April. And now they play Richmond, and the winner of this is the number one seed in the Atlantic 10 tournament. The loser will be the two. And that's good news for High Point because regardless of this outcome, the only time they'll be able to meet Richmond again will be in the championship game. This conference is Richmond's to lose, but this is a great opportunity for High Point. And nice weather down in North Carolina on Friday night. Kind of a wonky start time of 5 o'clock. That can be a challenge to some folks that aren't parents or directly related to the program. But I expect a vibrant environment. But Richmond is, the Spiders continue to roll. And I mean, look, Richmond, they're still in a position to, you know, grab a top seed in the NCAA tournament. But yeah, this not to be too flip, but this competition isn't going to help their numbers, but they certainly cannot lose any of these games, whether it's this weekend or anything in the Atlantic 10 tournament, if they want to still host a first round NCAA tournament game.
Do you think they're safe as far as, like, let's say they drop it to High Point, Friday night, or at some point in the A10 tournament? Are they still safe? Have they done enough to get in there? I mean, you look at the A10s out of conference; they're just over 500, largely because of Richmond. I worry about, we talked about a couple of weeks ago. You know, High Point drops they're 5-0 in conference, which looks great. And then you see a 17-9 to score in Cornell, and it's like, you know, it makes you wonder. So do you feel like Richmond would be safe if they dropped either this one or one in the A10 tournament?
You know, I think that's a great question, Craig. Their RPI currently is sitting at 5, but their strength of schedule is at 24, according to Lax Reference. Top 20 wins, Cornell, Georgetown, Virginia. The only, no bad losses. The only loss is to Notre Dame. Nope. I'm no mathematician, but I have to imagine if they lose this weekend or in the Atlantic 10 tournament, because next closest, you've got St. Joe's at a 21 RPI, UMass is 24, yep. High Point's 23. That RPI is going to take a hit if they lose anywhere along the line. Yep. So I think that I'd like to say they're in good shape, yep. But do you see the Atlantic 10 as a two-bid league? If Richmond loses, I'm not so sure.
I'm not either. And that's the thing, is like, hats off to John Crowley. I mean, he's done a good job. He's found, he's found it in that conference schedule. But I looked to Richmond last week, 2 weeks ago against Notre Dame. Notre Dame kind of jumped him real quick. St. Joe's took him. I think it was a two goal win by Richmond last week. That's a little closer than you want. Richmond had been winning quite comfortably, kind of in the 20s. So you kind of just have to, if you're you're Dan Schimatti, you're just kind of putting the boys on alert that, listen, everything's going to be in front of you. You don't want to become, be on pins and needles come Selection Sunday in May.
I would say if they win this game, if Richmond wins this game, it doesn't matter what happens in the tournament. They're in.
They're in.
I mean, they have wins, great wins. I mean, they would be 12-2. They might win a first round, like 13. Like, I think that's the way they were too. If they lose this one and lose in the conference tournament, maybe High Point just has their number. I don't know if they get in, but I think if a win this week gets them in as an early.
I don't know, man. I'm not going to argue it, but I'd be curious to see what Army's numbers were last year and the year before they lost in the Patriot League tournament and didn't get in both times. So, the beauty is win and you're in.
Yep. Just win, baby.
Yep.
Hold your fate. I'm going to take the Spiders in this one. I think they cruise, actually. What do you think, Craig?
No, I'm with you. Despite my doom and gloom and all the scare, I'm going with the Spiders as well.
Yeah,
this is where I feel like you guys should, the line should play a role in this one.
It just gets complicated because you remember what I said. Remember what you said last week. If you look at D Fly's numbers, he's actually in an elite category, near 70%. I had to check in that one. I had to look out for my guy.
The Joe Flacco of lacrosse prognostication.
No, I did it. I was 4-2 last week. I am 34-24 on the season, which puts me exactly at 58.6%.
Oh, which is really, that's legit.
There you go. You're winning more than you're losing. Automatically winning. If you part of the weekend watch, I'm tracking like the favorites against the spread. It is almost dead even. I think we're like 500. I think there's been a couple of pushes. But for the most part, like you look at the lines, and you also look at game totals. Game totals, like in years past, like the under has always hit. They're right about 500. I'm not talking Big Ten now. I'm talking about all of D1, all of the top 20. So,
All right. So we're both taking sputters in this one. Yep. The other big game on Friday night is for the Big East regular season championship. Georgetown plays at Villanova. The Hoyas are ranked number 12 nationally coming into the game. 4-0 in the Big East. Villanova's 3-1. This game's at 7. It's on ESPN Plus. And the Hoyas, again, big favorites in this one. 5.5 goal favorites in this game. Craig, I'll let you start with this game.
Yeah. How happy has Georgetown been to get back to Big East play? I feel like, you know, they played a gauntlet to start the season. Did not always look as pretty. It was a slow start for them, but they have handled their Big East competition, and that, you know, made it look like, hey, you know what, the gauntlet is worth it. Maybe our friends maybe in Durham could maybe take a note for that when they go to schedule for next year. And you know, they're going to come in. They're going to face Villanova. Villanova's 3-1. They've got a nice win over Penn State. You look at their last two games though; both went to overtime. They've got a loss to Providence, and then they've got a win against Denver. Again, I'm going to bring up what has the Big East done. Where the Atlantic 10, what we just talked about, were 500 in out-of-conference play. The Big East is only 40% out-of-conference. That is, like, fourth worst. They're tied with the CAA. They're just above, like, the neck and some of those ones. So you really... You know, if you're Georgetown, again, you're thinking, we don't have those signature wins. I've got to make sure that I'm going to be winning. And I really feel like I'm putting Richmond, when I was looking at this game, kind of doing some of my homework, putting Richmond and Georgetown in that same boat. Just win your regular season, win your conference tournament, and then you have nothing to worry about on Selection Sunday. Because if not, you could be in trouble.
For sure. And Georgetown is so top heavy with the Connor brothers, yep. You know, over 100 points between the two of them. Next closest, you've got Ransom and Bickle, both with 20 points. So they really rely on those two transfers to get the job done. I think the defense has been much better lately. They're pulling it together. I tell you, a team to watch out for is Providence. And you look at the Friars over the last couple of weeks, and with the exception of a 15-8 loss to Georgetown, their last four out of the last five games have been decided by a goal, three in overtime, including a win over Villanova and a win over Denver last weekend. Where have the Pioneers gone? Like the wheels have really kind of fallen off the Denver wagon. But I mean, look, Georgetown, this is much like the Atlantic 10 is Richmond's conference to lose. This is Georgetown's conference to lose. And they need to show up this weekend, which I'm sure that they will, and put forth a great effort to get that number one seed. I believe the Big East tournament is predetermined.
Yep, it's in Providence.
So it's in Providence. Even more to maybe look at the evil Bobby Bensons and the Friars in this one. Yeah, it's. I think the Big East tournament is going to be fun, but again, it's Georgetown's to lose.
Yeah, fair enough. That being said, I'm still going to take Georgetown in this one. What about you, D-Fly?
I'm taking the Hoyas as well.
I mean, this is like, I know we're past March, but this is Ed Pinckney and Patrick Ewing going at it.
Love it.
Great throwback reference, Sticks. Great throwback. All right, on Saturday, lots of great games. There's four of them we're going to preview. The first one is a top 10 matchup between Harvard and Cornell. Before we get into the details of this, let's bring in our guests this week. Cornell's leading scorer, Willem Firth. Please welcome into the show, junior All-America attackman from the Cornell Big Red, Willem Firth. Willem, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So let's rewind and start last year. Cornell wins its first national title, 48 years. Were you on the field when the final horn sounded, and whether you were or not, what was that feeling like in the moment for Willem Firth?
I mean, obviously it was pretty cool. I don't think I was on the field during that time. I was on the sideline, but Obviously, when that final buzzer went off, it was pretty special. Getting a sprint in, kind of dog pile with everyone. So that was pretty cool. It was a pretty special feeling, especially with all of our family there, all of our friends there, and something we worked really hard for. So it was pretty special to just kind of experience that with the group.
And I know Cornell has a great alumni base, very supportive, great fan base. And it was a long time, so that celebration must have been fantastic. At some point, you guys had to put that aside and start focusing on the 2026 season. So, what's your mindset? Winning a championship, coming back for your junior year with your teammates as you prepared for this season?
I think we tried to kind of get over it as quick as possible. Obviously, it's tough just with, you know, accomplishing that. But that's been something that's been super important for us as a group this year, is kind of understanding that, you know, last year's last year, and we've got our eyes set on winning another national championship this year. There's definitely things that we've learned from that experience from last year, so that's super important. We can take things that we know are good, we know are bad, but I think our group this year has done a really good job of kind of growing up. And, you know, I think something that is important for us is just finding our own identity this year. Obviously not trying to copy what we did last year. Like, we're a new team this year. Different things are going to work for us. We believe in ourselves this year as a group as well. So building that group this year .
So how would you best characterize what that new identity is for the Big Red in 2026?
Yeah, I think something we've learned over the years is that we can win games in different ways. Obviously we've won low scoring games. We've won some high scoring games. So I think the biggest thing for us is playing tough lacrosse and, you know, playing as hard as we can on the field, taking pride in, you know, ground balls, riding the ball well, clearing the ball well. I think the middle of the field is super important for us. But I think at the end of the day, for us, we're going to be happy with the result if we know that we played our hardest. So I think that's really important for us.
DJ Kearse was obviously a huge part of the program the last 5 years. Won the Wharton, won everything, helped lead the team to the national title. But it wasn't just him. This year's your offense has to replace not only CJ, but Michael Long, Hugh Kelleher, Andrew Dalton, some really big contributors points-wise. You and Ryan are back, and you're obviously contributing at a really high level. But who are some of the other players that have really emerged and stepped up for the Big Red?
Yeah, I think we've got a lot of players stepping up. A lot of guys come to mind. Brian Luzzi's been doing a great job. Rowan Nery's stepped up into a big role on attack. Jack Herendeen's been coming in and playing a big role. There's a lot of guys that are stepping up and playing really big roles. Ryan Waldman as well. I think our offense has just been doing a really good job of kind of playing together. You know, that six-man type offense where it doesn't matter who scores, doesn't matter who puts the ball in the back of the net. It's all about, you know, playing a six-man offense. And I think when we do that, we're hard to guard. So, yeah.
On the other end of the field, you replaced Wyatt Nuss with Matthew Tully, first-year starting goal. And he's having a really good season. In addition to Matthew, who are some of the guys on the defensive end who have been standouts for Cornell?
Obviously, Tully has been doing a great job in net. I think our whole defensive back line there, Brennan Staub, Matt Dooley, Ike Lones, Michael Marshall, they've been doing a great job of kind of holding it down from there.
All right, so I have a question for you. You are from Ottawa. You went to Hill Academy. Legendary. It not a long history for Hill Academy, but legendary in its short history in terms of producing top-notch players. I think our listeners really want to understand what that experience is like. Obviously, you said it's 5 hours away from your hometown.
Yeah.
So what's that experience like going to Hill Academy and playing there?
I mean, it's pretty special. I think it's super cool with the new location of the campus, right in the forest. That's obviously something that I thought was really cool. And then, I mean, obviously it's pretty special when you walk in every day and, you know, Jeff Teets coach you on the field, Brody Merrill's coaching you, taking a math class with Luke Magnan, who's an NLL player for the Ottawa Black Bears now. And actually one of my billet families that I lived with. But I think it's really cool how much lacrosse knowledge is kind of at that school. And there's just so many opportunities to learn. And you practice almost every day. You work out almost every day. It's a super competitive environment. Yeah, it's just pretty special kind of being around that culture and knowing like you've watched those guys for like the last like 10 years playing. So when you get to go there and learn the game from them, it's pretty cool.
Now, obviously, you had success as a young player. You went to Hill for 2 years. Was that a dream of yours to go there? Did they find you? Did you find Hill? Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, so I went to the Hill in grade 12. I hadn't really thought about it too much up until that point. I was going to like a public school in Ottawa called like Nepean High School. I didn't play much field lacrosse at that point. I didn't, you know, I was a little bit of club, but it was mostly box up until then. And Riley O'Connor, he was a coach at the Hill at that time. He doesn't coach there anymore, but he also coached me in the Toronto Beaches. He reached out to me and said it'd be a good opportunity for me to go there. So they kind of recruited me there. Obviously, it was a big decision, you know, moving away from home. Pretty far away. So yeah, I'd say they kind of recruited me. They showed me kind of the opportunities that could come from going to a place like the Hill. So yeah.
Okay. Here's a question for you. The Olympics are coming up and people are starting to think about Sixes rosters. What would the Hill Academy's Sixes roster look like? Who Hill are Academy. Some of the players that could be on this legendary team?
Yeah. I mean, obviously Jeff's got to be on there. I got to say Clark Peterson as well. I know Tanner Cook went there. He's a pretty special player. I don't think Brody was a student there. I'm not quite sure if he was, but his involvement in the school is pretty special. So he definitely counts. So I'll toss Brody in the mix. Shout out to Luke Magnan. I'll put him in there. I know his offensive skills might not be that high, but he's taught me a lot and he's done a lot for me. So I'll put him in there.
You have a goalie? You need a goalie.
Yeah, I mean, Dauber's got to be the goalie if we're going goalies.
Yeah, I think so.
And then our sixth, I don't know.
I think Wolfsburg could make that squad.
Yeah, I'd love to be on that squad. That'd be pretty cool. If not, I'd go like with a defensive guy who's fast, maybe like Matt Wright, who went to UNC. He's pretty fast, got some good hands too. So he could probably play both ways.
That's a stellar squad. That'd be very formidable. Okay, this week, huge Ivy League game. If Cornell can beat Harvard, you guys will have the number one seed. You'll host the Ivy League tournament the following weekend. What does Cornell need to do to get a win against the Crimson this weekend?
I mean, I think the big thing for us is focusing on ourselves. That's been something that's super important for us. You know, I think obviously you kind of want to get into the, you know, who we're playing. You want to know like the scout, maybe some specifics about the team. But I think at the end of the day, it's really focusing on, you know, what we bring to the table, what our team, how our team plays. And I think, you know, if we do that, if we play our game, I think we'll have success.
Okay. Are you ready for some quick hitters? Some more fun, lively questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. What is your all-time favorite sports team? Any sport?
All-time favorite sports team? I got to pick one.
Just one.
Or I go with the Celtics. I probably followed them the most. Isaiah Thomas was a big, you know, obviously smaller point guard. So I started following the Celtics when he started playing. So,
are you a hooper?
I did play some high school basketball. Yeah.
Okay. If you're playing, getting a 3-on-3 squad, who are the two guys you pull from the Cornell lacrosse team to play with you?
I'd pull Luke Gilmartin and TJ Lamb, two D middies, but they've got some good hands in basketball. They can shoot the ball too. So.
D-Middies can play hoops.
Yeah, they're good. They're good athletes, so they can play.
Yeah, that's like across all Division I teams. Like some of the best hoopers are D-Middies. Mm. Right, what's the best Cornell lacrosse tradition?
Best Cornell lacrosse tradition? I mean, I think it's simple, but I think just touching – we've got a sign in our locker room. I will give my all for Cornell today. So I think touching that sign, you know, every time you go in and out of the locker room is pretty special.
Cool. Why do you wear number 51?
Obviously, there's, you know, Jeff wore it before, kind of in respect to him. I think he did a lot for me at the Hill. So kind of, you know, that lefty attack spot. Yeah.
Okay. You're from Ottawa. We talked about this. I've been to Ontario several times, usually in Toronto. Mm. Why should I go to Ottawa? Like, what's the best things to see and do in Ottawa?
Best things? I mean, if you go in the winter, you can see the canal. You can skate down the canal, which is pretty cool. Like, go throughout the whole city. It's like this kind of... like a river, pretty much. It freezes. You can go for like a 3 kilometer skate throughout the city. Get a beaver tail too. So,
okay. All right, nice. If your family's in town, where's the best spot to go for a post game meal? a meetup spot in Ithaca?
There's a couple good spots, probably a Boathouse, Thompson & Bleecker, or like Revelry Yards. I've been there with my family. Pretty good. The Canopy as well, too.
All right. Who's the best cook or chef on the Cornell lacrosse team?
On the Cornell, I don't know about the whole team, but I know about my house. I'd probably have to say AJ Nicklick. He's taught me a couple things. I've lived with him throughout the summer, and we cooked up some pretty good meals. So he knows how to cook a steak too. He's a pretty good cook.
Besides the men's lacrosse team, on which Cornell team would you say you have the most friends on?
Most friends, probably say like the Cornell men's hockey team. I think got a couple buddies there. I think a couple of them used to play lacrosse as well. So yeah.
Right. When you guys go on the road, do you have a favorite place to play in the Ivy League?
Favorite place? I think Princeton's always pretty fun to play at. They get a good atmosphere at their games, so it's fun going there. Penn, playing in that stadium is pretty cool too. Yeah.
All right, last question. If I were to walk into the Cornell locker room, who's running the aux and what kind of music am I most likely to hear?
It's either Jackson Smart or Ethan Ruller. Probably a lot of house music. I know Smarty likes to throw some throwbacks from like the 90s on there too. So, yeah, probably around there in between those.
Nice. Hey, Willem, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. Best of luck to you this season and throughout the postseason.
Of course. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Number 10, Harvard, 9-3, 3-2 in the Ivy League at number 6th ranked Cornell, who's also 9-3. They're 4-1. This game's at noon. It's on ESPN Plus. Big Red are 2.5-goal favorites. Cornell sits atop the Ivy League with Princeton, who is also 4-1. So this has implications for seeding in the Ivy League tournament. Big game. Dixie, what are your thoughts?
A lot of offense could be played in this game. Goldstein, Firth on one side, Ip, Arndt, Malone, Spidel, you know, just good group. I think it being in Ithaca tilts it a little bit in the Big Red's favor, but not by much. I mean, you're looking at Princeton, Cornell, Harvard have all clinched spots in the Ivy League tournament. Yale with a win this weekend over, I believe they played Brown, would seal the deal and get the 4 seed. They don't want to lose that game because the Bulldogs lost to Penn earlier in the regular season, and you just don't want. I don't know how the tiebreakers shake out. You just don't want to get into the tiebreaker scenario because then you're hosed, or could be hosed. But I mean, you look at the RPIs. Princeton with a 3 RPI, Harvard 7, Cornell 8. I mean, so all three schools are top 10. You know, and if the tournament were to start today, they're all in, I think. Cornell, Harvard with a 26 strength of schedule, Cornell with a 22. I mean, look, what defense can make the big play at the big moment in this game? You know, there's going to be goals. You know, there's going to be swings. You know, there's going to be momentum. Who can make the big play at the big moment? And, you know, that's going to really determine, I think, the winner of this game. Graham Stevens, really nice goaltender for Harvard, has kind of struggled a little bit down the stretch. You know, how does he show up? How does he play? I think this game is going to be double digits. I'm looking at like a 14-12, 14-13. It'll be high scoring and it'll be fast paced.
So you look at Harvard. I was really proud of the effort that they put up last week against Princeton. I know it was gut-wrenching. That game was back and forth the entire time. And then, you know, Princeton scores that late goal to win it. But I think there's a sense of a good feeling for Jerry Byrne and the Crimson, because you look 2 weeks ago, they dropped a game to Yale. They probably didn't want to lose. They were losing the face-off battle. Yale really kind of took it to them. And so, like, I saw a fight last week that I feel like, again, if this is at Jordan Field, I'm right there with Dixie. I think Harvard's probably going to take this one. And I'm going to be honest, if you're looking at Cornell being at RPI number 8, you've got UVA and Penn State right there. That's going to put you on the bubble there, so you don't want to lose that one. The question becomes, you know, like beyond Firth, beyond Goldstein, where is going to be that depth of scoring? That has been Cornell's kind of bugaboo all season long. They've got those two guys going. Their extra man unit is very good, but where is the depth of scoring going to come? I will say come Ivy League tournament, I do think Yale is going to take care of business against Brown. Sorry, Larkin. But I think Yale could be one of the hottest teams playing right now in college lacrosse, and I think that they could be that sleeper pick that could actually win the Ivy League tournament. I can get so bold.
That is a bold thing.
That is.
There's a lot of good teams in the Ivy League. Definitely a lot of good teams. Yale has proven itself and beaten a few of them. So we'll have to see. That's why we play these games. I'm going to take the Big Red in this game. They're 2.5 goal favorites. I like them at home. I'll take the Big Red.
Not so fast, my friend. Jerry Byrne will not lose 3-0 to end the Ivy League. Harvard in the upset wins by a goal.
Good upset pick.
Our next game is number 16 Duke versus number 3 North Carolina. This will be in Chapel Hill. The Dukies are in a bit of a free fall. They're 0-3 in the ACC, 8-4 overall. This could be their last game of the season. The game is at noon. Fans can catch it on ESPNU. The Heels are 1.5 goal favorites. Craig, I'll let you start.
Yeah, for Duke, I mean, I think Lacrosse Reference has them as like a, I think they're putting out the candles and at church on Sunday for them, maybe saying that there's a chance for them to make the tournament. I don't quite see it. I know Terry didn't have it in his bracketology. He has them like ranked at like 16. To me, like you look at it, Duke just has problems at goal. Buck Cunningham did a nice job coming in. He had 15 saves last week against Notre Dame. He looked good, but the problem is there's no offense. You know, like Notre Dame, I think they were trying out for the Big Ten. It was another low-scoring game, under 10. Duke just could not find anything resembling an offense. So, like, you look at this, I mean, North Carolina, I feel, is like one of the top teams, obviously, in the country. Face-offs are going. You know, obviously, the offense is good. If you have any questions about North Carolina, it is their goaltending. You know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, does that midfielder line at North Carolina, are they going to hit that freshman wall? I think that could be the question for the North Carolina goalie. Is he hitting that wall? I think he only had 3 saves in the overtime win last week against Virginia. So, like, to me, like, the only thing that I can give for Duke is it's a rivalry game. And what better way to, like, if it's going to end your season, well, let's spoil it. Let's knock off the Tar Heels.
A lot of questions surrounding Duke coming into this game. I think the diehards, or maybe even the delusional or holding out hope that Duke wins this game. They can't make the ACC tournament, but some way somehow they make the NCAA tournament. Yeah, Duke's 8-4. Started out 8-0. They've lost 4 in a row, and people are like, "Is Duke even going to show up on Saturday?" Yeah, they're going to show up. These guys are too good. They're too proud to not. And look at 2 years ago when Carolina was in a similar situation. They were 0-4 in the ACC. They weren't going to the ACC tournament. They weren't going to the NCAA tournament. And they came out and they blitzed Duke and were up by 6 or 7 and won the game and ended that season on a really positive note. Duke has an opportunity to, you know, you let the chips fall where they may, right? Mm-hmm. So if they win this game, there's still a glimmer of hope alive for them to make the NCAA tournament. It's not much, but it's something, and you can build on it for next year. Carolina, you know, the Virginia game was probably a little bit closer than it needed to be with the dominance from Brady Wambach, and the offense put up numbers, but allowed a lot of goals, including one with 1 second left that forced overtime. But Carolina's playing at a high clip. They're healthy for the most part, and the defense has played very, very well. So this is going to be a great environment at Dorrance. I believe their 86 national championship team is reuniting, and so that'll be exciting for those guys to be back on campus. And whenever you have that, we saw it last weekend. There was some. I know Matt Ward, my colleague at ESPN, was back at Klockner last week to celebrate their 20 years, and I know that they gave juice to that Virginia team. Anish and Kark will have this game. And I think you're calling for a little bit of cloudy weather, but even when it's cloudy down in Chapel Hill, it's still a beautiful day.
It's still beautiful. Yeah. And to me, like, if I'm picking this one, I'm picking North Carolina. And to me, I think they're going to take the juice of the home crowd. I think you can chalk up the Virginia loss, that Virginia overtime win, a little bit to the Klockner fans and some of that, you know, getting that mojo. To me, this is where Brushy, I think, puts the hammer on the floor. And I think he could make this one crooked.
I think you chalk up that overtime close game against Virginia more to the firepower of Virginia's offense, which Duke just doesn't have. So I'm going to take the heels in this one as well. All right, the other big game in the ACC, number 5 Syracuse, number 1 Notre Dame, a top 5 matchup in South Bend. Syracuse is 11-3, 2-1 in the ACC. Notre Dame's 9-1, 2-1 in the ACC. Games at noon also, 3 games at noon that we're previewing. It will be available on streaming. People can catch this on the ACC Network Extra streaming. I have a question. Why are Notre Dame home games almost unavailable? This is like the third time we've been having this conversation this season. The Irish are 1.5 goal favorites, but this one should be maybe the best game of the weekend.
You look at the standings, Notre Dame, Carolina, Syracuse, all 2-1. Virginia has finished their ACC play. They play Drexel this Friday night. Looking at the ACC standings, Notre Dame, Carolina, Syracuse, all 2-1. Notre Dame wins against the Orange. They clinch number 1 seed in next weekend's ACC tournament. Carolina wins and Syracuse wins. Carolina gets the top seed in the ACC tournament. Looking at the numbers, impressive numbers, obviously. UNC with a 2 RPI, 2 strength of schedule. Notre Dame has the number 1 RPI, but the strength schedule is 28. But still, wins over Georgetown, Ohio State, Maryland, Richmond, Carolina, Duke. Syracuse, number 4 RPI, 7 strength of schedule, which is crazy when you think about all the teams that Syracuse has played this year. It's ridiculous. Joey Spallina became the all-time points leader in Syracuse history, but they've got to travel to Orlada. And I'm sure I don't know. I think they'll charter, but I'm not sure. I just know if you don't charter to South Bend, it's a tough road to hoe because you're flying to either flying to Detroit and taking a puddle jumper to South Bend, or you're flying to Chicago and driving a couple hours to South Bend, and it just kind of really messes up your day. But, you know, look, it's that Syracuse offense against this Notre Dame defense. I expect a great crowd, a lot of juice. There'll be a lot of chirping from the Notre Dame faithful. They love to get after the opposing team, which I think is fun. And there's a lot on the line for this game. So, not only ACC tournament standing or positioning, but also positioning for the NCAA tournament. So it'll be a good one.
Yeah, and I believe the blue and gold game might be Saturday at Notre Dame. So it would be interesting to see. I love it like when Notre Dame's football team comes over and then they're on the berm in Arlotta and just hooting and hollering and making a lot of noise. But my biggest question, again, is with Notre Dame. I mean, yes, they are number one. And they have earned that spot. But I asked this question. I texted D-Fly last week. Can we trust Notre Dame's offense to actually win a national championship in 2026? I have no doubt that Riccardelli and that defense can shut people down. But can we do this now consistently, week in and week out, continuing to hold teams under 10 while you're not scoring 10? If you look at their 5 of their last 7 games, their offense has been held to 10 goals or less, and they go for big stretches. I mean, we're talking a quarter, sometimes a half, with almost no goals. And sometimes that kind of blows your mind when you look at the pieces around them. But like, I have those questions. And on the same side, the game's outside. So Syracuse probably can't win it, right? I mean, that's the fun narrative. They went to Baltimore earlier in the season and they won. But Syracuse is a different squad when they're outside. They have played well at Arlotta recently. To me, like, that's going to be the most interesting test here. Can Spallina, can Finn Thompson, can Luke Roa find enough to, you know, string a few goals? Because to me, I think if we can get, you go a 3-4 goal run against the Irish, I don't know if that offense can actually get you back. The defense may be able to hold it, But I don't know. I don't know if they can dig themselves out of a hole.
I'm going to take the Irish in this game. I like them at home. As you would say, Craig, they, you know, they're on, not in the dome. So I'll take the Irish. How about you?
You know what? To make it fun podcasting, I'm going to say Joey Spallina goes one-on-one against Sean Light in overtime, and the Orange take it in Arlotta.
Okay, in OT. I love it. That's good. That's good broadcasting right there.
That's it.
Yeah, that's good stuff. All right, last game of the weekend we're going to preview is a top 20 matchup in the Big Ten. Number 20, Rutgers on life support. 8-6 overall, 1-3 in the Big Ten. They'll take on number 11, Maryland, who's 6-5 now, 3-2. They were one of the four co-champions in the Big Ten. A 6 o'clock game on Big Ten Network Plus. Herps are 4.5 goal favorites. Maryland has won. This dominated the series, and when they played just 2 weeks ago, Maryland won 12-2.
How is Rutgers still ranked number 20? They were not in my top 20 ballot. I was I'll be honest. I'm looking beyond that. They had one win in the league, and it came in double overtime. We will not mention in overtime. We won't mention who they beat. But I feel like Rutgers is a program that is struggling. And if I take a look back, we think back a few years ago when they had their NASCAR defensive middies. I think, what did they go to the semifinals? They went to the semis, or the Memorial Day weekend, or the quarterfinals that year.
21, they went to the quarters. 22, they went to the champ weekend semis. Yeah,
I mean, like those teams were high-flying. And I think one of the things that Brian Breck did a really good job of back then is he used the transfer portal to leverage that. And what I see in the Big Ten is they're almost a lever. As Rutgers has kind of come down from that spot, you've seen Michigan and Kevin Connery and Ann Arbor kind of going up. And you almost wonder, has Connery kind of leveraged, I don't know, I'm going to say the Ross School of Business in Ann Arbor, which is pretty good, you know, to be able to take some of that talent that has allowed Michigan to kind of go over Rutgers. Because right now, I think Rutgers is struggling. Cardin Stroller is one of the best goalies in the Big Ten. But I feel like he's been under such fire and such pressure all season that he just can't keep up anymore. You know, we saw this a couple of weeks ago where Maryland was up 12-2. I have a hard time seeing that this result is going to be any different, and that's going to be really rough for Rutgers because they're the ones going to be hosting the Big Ten tournament come next week in Piscataway.
So the last two Big Ten tournaments at Ohio State and Michigan, respectively, the host schools weren't there. And you're looking at the real possibility of Rutgers not being at SHI Stadium next weekend for the semifinals. Maryland, they're good. They didn't shoot particularly well last weekend at Hopkins. Orange Linus had a great game, but they had a couple one-on-ones that they just didn't finish. And that happened to Hopkins a week before against Ohio State and Caleb Fayock. But I think that this Maryland team will learn from the loss. And they throttled Rutgers a couple weeks ago. I was there for that game. In the last 2 weeks, Rutgers has played competitive first quarter against Maryland, competitive first quarter against Penn State, and then a 6-0 second quarter blew them out of the water. And they're not a team built to come back. Colin Cardilla needs to step up in this game. I think he has one assist in the last two games. Casey Mongiello, a talented middie, needs to assert himself. But bigger picture, John Scarelli, their faceoff man, has missed the last 3 weeks, who got hurt in that Hopkins game right before overtime. And they've sorely missed him. But they actually competed at the faceoff dot last weekend against Penn State. I don't think Cardin Stoller's been as sharp this year as he has in years past. And I think that has a lot to do with the extra possessions that teams have been getting against Rutgers. But it's that second quarter, for whatever reason, that second quarter. I think now they're like a negative 15 or 18 in the second quarter, and that's never a good thing. But you know, look, you got Ohio State, Michigan in the other quarterfinal. That game's being played. It's a replay of last weekend where Ohio State had a late goal. And then Maryland and Rutgers with Hopkins and Penn State sitting at the 1-2 seeds. So, I'm not quite sure how Rutgers is going to be able to pull this one off.
And you look at that Michigan-Ohio State game. I mean, that was a bloodbath last week, right? Like Michigan got up early, and then Ohio State just did what they did and kind of sat on a little bit in the second half. They caused a lot of turnovers, kind of come there. But we've seen this playbook from Kevin Connery in Michigan, 23-24, kind of coming in through the back door and coming in through the national, going in through the Big Ten championship. So to me, like, the Big Ten should be wide open. I mean, I'm thinking Penn State, ideally, full complement of talent, should be in contention there. But, I mean, it's going to be who can score 10. And I think that's going to be the key for most of these games.
When you have four teams sharing the regular season championship in a six-team league, it is wide open. Big question mark I have for Michigan is Luke Shanahan, injured late in the game against Ohio State. What is his status for the upcoming quarterfinal against the Buckeyes?
Yeah, that'll be huge.
We joked about this earlier, and I have to share it again. We're talking about low scoring and just the bruising nature of Big Ten lacrosse. The all Big Ten first team came out. They announced their end of year awards, and there's only two offensive players on the entire first team. I think that says everything. Matt Collison and Leo Johnson. Only two offensive players that made first team all Big Ten.
That's fair.
It speaks to the defensive prowess, the individual talent. And remember, there's no Bobby Van Buren or Will Schaller on that team because of injuries.
Who would be on that first team?
Yeah.
So if you're Rutgers going into 2027, right? 2026, the ship has largely sailed. 2027, is it time to bring back NASCAR? Is it time to like zig when now everyone else is zagging? Everyone else is thinking about defense and playing a slow it game. Do we want to speed it up? Do we want to go a little bit faster to maybe see like, does that give you that advantage or kind of tilt it differently?
I don't think that they've gotten away from the NASCAR. They just don't have the
talent.
They don't have three, four shorties that can run up and down the field. I mean, I think Joe Youngerkiss, who is a first team all Big Ten defender, is outstanding, and he's good in transition. He's just, he's one guy. So,
yeah.
And they're not getting the saves
right that
they have in years past.
Right.
That's how you start a good fast break. All right, wrapping this up, Terps 4.5 goal favorites, Craig. I'm going to take the Terps at home. Again, 2 weeks ago, they blew them out. I think they get the W again and move on to the semifinals.
In honor of Dixie, I'll take Terps. I'll take the Terps and the 4.5 to cover.
He's taking a line. Look at this guy.
Terps and 4.5. Okay. And that wraps up our game previews, and it's time for the give and go. So I'm going to tell you guys a quick story. I had to do this. I got to go to this trivia. It was like for charity, a trivia night. And there was one question that stood out to me about an actor. Can you name the actor who starred in two of the greatest TV series of all time? He was in both The Wire and Game of Thrones as a prominent character.
Wendell Pierce.
No. Not in Game of Thrones.
Was it Ned Stark?
No. It was
not Dominic West.
I didn't know the actor's name, but somebody I was with like on my team like pulled it out of nowhere.
Dominic Lambertozzi.
The answer is Aidan Gillen. The actor Aidan Gillen.
Yeah.
He played Tommy Carsetti in The Wire, the mayor. And then he played Littlefinger, Lord Baelish, in Game of Thrones.
But he was also, he's been in a bunch of stuff, but he was also in Bohemian Rhapsody. He was the first manager of Queen.
Yeah, he was.
But I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, that's okay. But there was a guy at our table who called himself a trivia expert, and he kind of joined our team. And he is like, oh, I wouldn't know that one. I never watched The Wire.
And the first rule of trivia is you never declare yourself a trivia expert.
Yeah, I was going to say, how many did he actually get right? Like,
Not many.
And, but I got a t-shirt this one time, so like I was the king.
But the best part was, I was like, everyone in Baltimore who likes TV has seen The Wire. It's just you have to have watched The Wire. But he'd also never seen Game of Thrones. And he made it like it was an excuse, like, how would I ever know the answer to that? And I'm like, dude, these are two of
the best TV series of all time.
Yes.
So, our give and go today. Going to get your opinion. The best drama TV shows, in your opinion. And it's not like a like I have a ranking I pulled up on IMDb that just is going to like sort of inform this list, and we can talk about a little bit. But what do you guys feel is your favorite TV series of all time? Not comedies; they got to be dramas. And we'll let our guest Craig McMichael start this one off.
Well, in honor of Rutgers and Shea Stadium, you know, hosting the Big Ten, bada bing, bada boom, The Sopranos. Obviously, number one right there.
Great
obviously,
choice.
Obviously, one of the best ones.
It was ranked number 5 in this list on IMDb. And this is just some guy's list, but he did a lot of research and put it on there. So, yeah, a top 20 show for sure. And one of my favorites. I'd have to say that's one of my favorites. Dixie, you want to make a selection?
Sure. I have a feeling this IMDb list is going to be like, you know, the Joker that puts together the greatest top 20 guitarist and has Eddie Van Halen at like 7 just because. So my wife and I actually were just talking about this at dinner tonight because we just finished Breaking Bad. We had never seen Breaking Bad before, and we finished season 5 last night, and it was phenomenal. Phenomenal show. Would it be my top? I'm not so sure. Right off the bat, The Wire is one of my favorite shows ever. I'll go with one, Last Kingdom, Uhtred, Son of Uhtred of Battenborough. Last Kingdom is an outstanding, outstanding show.
Well, I believe I'm the one who introduced you to that show.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. You might have, yeah.
Yeah, because you told me about The Kingdom.
Yes.
Family in LA.
The MMA fighting.
Yeah, yep. which I watched all of. Dixie, I love that. I was thinking about this earlier. The Last Kingdom, I love that show. I'm not sure it's as, in terms of script and well-written. Mm-hmm. It's a very likable show. It's probably in my top 10 favorite shows of all time. But you're right. Breaking Bad on this list is number 1 all time. And
I can see that.
The Wire is number 3. So you know good TV. And I know that you do. I will have to say this.
The Last Kingdom not make it?
I didn't scroll down that far.
That's bullshit.
I'm still looking for it. There's some
troll.
It's somewhat like Game of Thrones is number 18. Again, I love that show.
Yep.
I've never seen it. Well, hold on. Before you go down the list, what are
another,
your...
Another Baltimore guy's not seen Game of Thrones. What are they doing? Did HBO, like, it was canceled that year or what?
I don't know. I just never watched it. I'm not really into Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, you got to have HBO. I guess you have HBO.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, there's some people who don't like the fantasy part of, or sort of like that Game of Thrones.
I mean, look, Breaking Bad ended 13 years ago. Yeah.
We
just
won't spoil it for you.
Just watched it.
It's a great show, right? Better Call Saul. That's what you have to watch next. It's Better Call Saul.
Well, buddies of mine who swear by Breaking Bad are like, okay, now it's Better Call Saul and El Camino. Gotta watch them.
Better Call Saul is legit. It's really good. Yeah.
Good. Saul Goodman was an intriguing character for sure in Breaking Bad. What about you? Come on.
Well, from this list that we haven't talked about, the show.
It doesn't have to be on a list.
Well, it's like, it's one of the shows. Mad Men, great show. Love that.
It's one of my favorite shows of all time. I binged that a while back, and like, it makes you want to go like 1960s ad agency again, doesn't it?
It came up at work. I referenced a Mad Men reference, and the two people I said it to just went right over their heads. My boss was talking about, she's got this like bar, like cabinet that she wants to bring in and put it in our like office space.
Yeah.
And I was like, and she was telling another person who was visiting, like, oh, we're going to put this there. And I go, yeah, it'll be like Don Draper and Mad Men had one. Why can't we have a bar in our office? And they had no idea what I was talking about.
Would have been good.
And then I was going to say, I'm going to go leave and go watch a movie during the middle of the workday. But I decided that that wouldn't have been appropriate because they didn't know what I was talking about. They have this show Band of Brothers on here, which is really a mini series. But I can't tell you how many times I've watched Band of Brothers. I absolutely love that. I've seen every one of those episodes probably 10 times.
Yeah, that to me. So that was, I was a freshman in college when that came out, and I remember it was like must see TV every Sunday night. And like again, 26, 27 years later, one of my favorites. Like you're always like engrossed into the characters, and like you just you have that emotion that emotional feeling. So to me, that's one of the best.
And then when you see one of those actors in another show, you're like, oh, that guy was Bill Guarnier. From, you know, it's like. He was so good. It's like you root for them. You root for their careers.
Yep. Yep. What about House of Cards? And like I will say this. What happened with Kevin Spacey at the end of it sort of like took the last couple seasons kind of a different way. But the first like two or three seasons of House of Cards, I was an AP government teacher for like almost 20 years. And I loved like House of Cards kind of making some of those references and just like bringing that in of like the inside of it. To me, that was one of my top dramas as well.
Love that.
That was the very first show I ever watched on Netflix, and it was outstanding. The only season that was affected by Kevin Spacey's situation was the last season.
Yeah, it just made it weird.
But the other seasons, I mean, you know, him and his wife were just despicable. But it
Princess
was
Buttercup.
Incredible show. Incredible.
Yeah. They filmed some of that show at Goucher College in Towson.
Oh, yeah?
Where we, at the same time, we were working inside lacrosse and running some summertime like lacrosse events there. And it would be funny. You're like, oh, this is the scene where, you know, that thing happened right here, right on this spot on campus, which was pretty neat.
Awesome. What about, I know I'm jumping ship. But I have to ask, so international flavor. Have you guys seen Squid Games?
I watched the first one, and it was okay. We started watching the second, and I lost interest real fast.
To me, like, I don't know what it was. Like, it's gory. I thought it was really well written. Did you watch it in Korean with the English subtitles?
Of course not. No. Absolutely not.
I'm going to say, like, I don't know if it made a difference. It was not as good when I watched it in English, but like with the subtitles. And again, I think this is also having a young child and like keeping the TV low. So we're used to always having subtitles on the TV. But watching it in Korean with the English subtitles, I think it was really well written. There's three seasons. And again, like if you can get beyond the gore thing, I think it was really well done.
No, the first season was good. The second season just, I don't know, it just didn't seem as... I liked the games, and it was too, like, outside of the games. I love Sopranos. A couple other shows I'll throw out. Peaky Blinders, outstanding show. And there's a show called Succession that I loved. Yes. I think it was the last two seasons of Succession were
phenomenal. Just,
I mean, you want to talk about dreadful human beings. The Roy, Logan Roy, and oh man, that was backstabbing at its best.
Yeah, really good. That Succession comes in at number four on this guy's list.
Oh yeah?
So he's got Breaking Bad number one, The Wire three, Succession four, Sopranos five, Better Call Saul seven, Mad Men eight. So we'd be friends with this guy. But
what's
the
number two?
The Leftovers, an HBO show that I couldn't stand.
Oh yeah,
I like that. It was terrible. It's like, I was like, what is this about? Where are they going? Like, I don't think I ever watched the end of it. They lost me on The Leftovers. But it's a good list. And TV is great. And it's never been a better time to be a TV fan, because a lot of these shows, you just have to wait a week for the next episode to come out. And now you can watch like two or three of them back to back, or all of them if you want, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
That seems like a good place to stop. A reminder that the D-Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Special thanks to this week's guests, Craig McMichael and Willem Firth. Do us a favor, like us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe, leave a review if you feel it. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. Love hearing from you, so reach out to us on social media at Twitter and Instagram at DFly and Dixie. Thanks for listening, and as always, enjoy the games.